Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm your host, Cynthia Boer. And my guest today is David Blogg. And he wrote a book called Healing the Brain, Stress, Trauma, and LGBTQ Youth. Welcome, David. How are you today?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm fine.
So, tell everybody a little bit about your book.
Sure. The book is my second. I have background in as a science medical writer, and for years I worked at the Dana Foundation in New York City, which is a very unique place that supports public awareness of brain research and the need for it. And so this book is really, I like to call it a second edition, but it is based on that first book with a particular, it's of course updated. The last book was done about 7 years ago. So this is updated, and it includes, because of our mission, of the organization I work for, 1,000 Moms, the book includes a particular couple of chapters on the unique role of stress on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender youth. Those are the and adults, actually. But really, Cynthia, it is a book about stress. It is a book about how stress affects our health. And I think it's something that everyone really should have an interest in, but particularly parents, teachers, counselors in school, doctors, particularly primary care doctors, who really don't, as was with the last book, primary care doctors they needed it to just get familiar with issues relating to the brain. As it's been a few years since they've been out of school, and other professionals use it.
So tell our listening audience a little bit about what differs from stress in the gay community than other people in other walks of life.
Oh, sure. Well, the issue of gay stress, and we call it stress on steroids, is basically, it's more intense. And it comes at you in different ways. What we say in the book, and I quote our medical consultant, Dr. Bill Buffy, is that stress experienced by other minorities and other non-minorities is direct, or is stress experienced by, say, and this is not to diminish, and it's not a competition here, but stress experienced by, say, a social minority, a racial minority, stress experienced by disabled people, is sort of well, you can see it. You can identify people. They whereas on the other hand, gay people are, by and large, for the most part, invisible. And I use as an example, well, I could use my example. I grew up gay in a in a family and had to hide. I was invisible to them. My minority status or my feelings, my stress was born of that I was carrying a secret around, and I did not think, I mean, I had great parents. I mean, looking back, they did the best they could with something they didn't understand, and I have a gay brother. But they were good Catholics, religious people, and I was always uncomfortable with the thought that if I told them what was really going on with me, that they would reject me. And, you know, part of me looking back says, no, that wouldn't have happened. But guess what? That is what's happening with these youth. And it's happening. It's the reason our organization was founded, because youth are not safe still in their own homes because they are invisible. They're by and large invisible. Our organization started with many stories came across to us, but one in particular, if I could just take a minute to describe, was a youth outside of Utica, and excuse me, he had been adopted at age 5 into this fairly large family. And when he realized he was gay around the age of 16, which is kind of late, but he told his parents, and they immediately rejected him. They went back to court. They went back to the judge to have the adoption rescinded. They petitioned the court to have this happen, and guess what? The judge did it. And it seems unconscionable or unbelievable, because this is when you adopt a child, you know, that is your birth child by law, or what, that is your child by law. And so this wonderful this wonderful kid is now back in the custody of the county for the crime of being himself. So it's that was just a one story of many, many that goes on, and we have a woman. She's one of our official moms. All of our moms are volunteers. They do what they can. That's the nature of our organization. We have a woman, wonderful woman in North Carolina, who is really like the unofficial mom for many, many gay youth in the North Carolina area where she lives. And she counsels people often, and this is standard, this is sound professional advice she's giving. She says, if you don't feel safe in your own house, then you had better not come out, because where are you going to go at age 14, at age whatever? And this is just as you know, news about progress is being made about gay people, about gay issues, gay causes, and guess what? This information is filtering to these kids at lower and lower ages, and you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, sexuality is set at age 5 for everybody, not just straight people. So, in my case, I was carrying around a secret for, in my case, it was 20 years. And that is not optimal growth. That does not set the stage for developing social relationships, which are necessary for healthy growth. And I figured out at some point I would have a roof over my head, but for a lot of kids, and that's why, Cynthia, 50% of the homeless youth population identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual. That's a pretty horrible high statistic. 50% in cities around the country.
Is there a lot of homeless gay young people in upstate New York?
Well, yes, there are, and statistics are hard to find, but I have worked with St. Anne's Institute in Albany. They have a large homeless gay youth intake and in the old days we'd call it an orphanage, but they it's called a residential facility now. So yes, I've spoken with worked with the people at St. Anne's and In Our Own Voices, another great organization in Albany. They too work with homeless gay youth, and that is the organization that very bravely a few years ago excuse me, started a billboard campaign and a billboard campaign of public awareness for gay youth. Just basically the billboard said, we are your children, we are your brothers, we are your parents. And these billboards went up all over the Albany, Schenectady, Troy area. It was very controversial. It came to a point where there was a community meeting, and I saw a gun or two there, and I saw, the state police was called because of death threats, because people vehemently objected to these billboards. The billboards were intended to build public awareness and nothing more, but they were, I applaud In Our Own Voices for that. It was a wonderful campaign, and they took a lot of risk.
The you talk about the Romanian orphan story, which means a failure to thrive. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. Well, it really is a story about how people under tremendous stress, and I use the comparison to what LGBT youth can experience. I'm not saying it's all the time, and it is getting better is the term, but the story of the Romanian orphans, when I was at the Dana Foundation, one of the science researchers went to Romania, which when the Soviet Union was collapsing in the late 80s, early 90s, and Romania was part of the Soviet bloc, in Romania, part of it was a political situation, but the economy was so bad, the social lack of social services, that lack of any support for parents, that babies were basically abandoned to the state, mm-hmm. and they were put in orphanages. And what happened is really rather fascinating and a tragedy, a big, big tragedy. I believe the figure was there were over 200 babies and infants housed in these warehouses, these group homes. This is really a euphemism. But when and what happened was there was so little attention given to them. Besides, they would get food, they would get water, they would get clothing. But guess what? That was about it. They didn't get touch. they didn't get social interaction. And those two things are crucial for development. The touch is very, very important for growth of a child, for strengthening that parent-child bond. And children are depend upon it. It produces endorphins. Endorphins are natural painkillers. They reduce stress. And it works the same way for the parents. But these children were not being touched. So guess what? Their cortisol, their stress levels were very, very high. And what happens in the stress response in all people, no matter what the age, is that if you're constantly under stress, you're overproducing a whole bunch of hormones, one of which is cortisol, which can destroy, damage, really, every part of the body. So these children came out of development, out of childhood, with all sorts of physical, social deficits, and in the social work world, that's called failure to thrive. I mean, they were underweight, not the right height, and just name that this. I mean, name the disorder. It was there, and one striking thing that I remember was most of these kids had eye problems, vision problems, and how did that happen? Well, they were in this. They're in a crib all day, not getting any attention, and looking at blank or gray walls all day. Well, the visual system for us develops a lot based on seeing contrast, seeing different colors, different shapes. They saw blank walls. Well, they developed a thing called strabismus, lazy eye, because there are certain windows of development. I mean, you can't go back at age. Well, you can with great effort go back and correct strabismus, lazy eye, but you it's quite a chore, and the brain is not. The brain is primed for developing certain tasks at certain ages, and they were missing these windows, these developmental milestones. And so the effects of stress can be astonishing, and we talk in the book about, well, you know, what is optimal stress? What is optimal development? What is optimal nurturing? And we look to a little bit of we have Eric Maslow, who wrote a milestone book, Glenn, Toward a Psychology of Being. And then we use the work of Eric Erickson, talking about the cycle of needs. What needs to happen in the growth of a youth, and what will happen if this cycle isn't completed, and things like food, getting fed, basic things, getting clothed, being held, so that you build trust, not only with the parent, but with the outside world, and you become a self-confident, self-actualizing is the term that Maslow used, youth. The founder of our organization, Marcia Novi, a very strong, powerful woman, said that she wanted to see strong, confident youth. Well, you don't get to that point. You don't get strength and confidence unless you develop properly with the right supports and the right touch. And sadly, I think gay youth suffer from this lack of confidence. I had a professional say to me once, he said, I think gay youth, gay men was his practice, he said, I think gay men are beaten up for being indecisive in this society. And I know that's a large concept. I thoroughly agreed with what he said, having having gone through my experience, I don't discount what women go through. I don't discount what minorities go through, but the stress that gay youth have to experience as they develop is extraordinary. It's extraordinary, and it's a lot to overcome, and it really affects. It can bite you back, and these deficits can really come to haunt you in adult life, later adult life. You haven't socialized properly. A lot of gay men I know, and we point this out in the book, have trouble with many problems with social relationships, problems with starting and forming and building personal relationships, partnerships. I mean, it's great that we have marriage equality, but, you know, frankly, I've talked to a lot of my friends, gay friends, and they say it's impossible. It is just really, really, really tough, the stressors. And they don't know really anybody who's really has a good same-sex or minority, bisexual, or any of those. That having strong, lasting relationships are very tough.
You know, in this day and age where people, we're more enlightened and we're more accepting of diversity, because of the acceptance of diversity over the past number of years, do you think that the stress amongst gay people has lessened?
I would say yes, yeah. But I'd also like to point to the, we refer often on our show and in our programs to the, it's called the GLSEN Climate Survey, which is the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network. It's a national organization, and every year they do, they call it their School Climate Survey, and it's really one of the most reliable scientific measurements of what progress is being made, and they just released their 2016 survey, and just a few of the points they make is that school climate for I'll just toss off a few here school climate for LGBT students has improved somewhat over the years, and they've been doing this at least for about 10 years. So tolerance has improved, yet remains quite hostile for many. They say, for instance, 65% of LGBT students heard homophobic remarks frequently or often. 33% heard negative remarks specifically about transgender people, and that is a legislative point that New York State has really dropped the ball on protection for transgender people in a bill called the Gender Equality. It's the Gender Equality Bill that. I think it's been brought back up in the state, but it was voted down a few years ago. It's not the only group remaining that without legal protection. So the GLSEN, Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network Climate Survey, also says that 56% of gay students reported physically experiencing LGBT-related discrimination policies or practices at school. And the bottom line is, these kids say because of these activities, lack of support from parents, not necessarily parents, from teachers, the bullying, the verbal, the physical harassment, that they are, they say, they report, and the studies show that they'll be 30% less likely to graduate high school. And that is a statistic that is parallel to other things we know about. They're 30% more likely to use substances, illegal substances, 30% more likely to have depression than their straight peers, and 30% likely to attempt or commit suicide than their straight peers. So you're right, it has gotten better, but these numbers here are not a good picture. It shows that we have a lot of work to do in schools, in the home, to support these youth. You're right, it has in some ways gotten better, but I think that we're not looking deep enough, and if the end result is 50% of gay youth on the street, I think we have a lot to do to bring those numbers down.
What is the suicide rate amongst gay youth?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
The suicide rate amongst gay teenage people.
Yeah, well, it is, again, a hard, how can I say, we intuitively, our organization and those who work with gay youth, and we know it's high. I don't have at my fingertips the exact number, but it's a difficult number to get out there. I mean, only because many parents, and I've heard this sadly from funeral directors, parents do not want the story out. They do not want if a youth has committed suicide, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to have the funeral director report it. And I was at the suicide walk by one of the major suicide support organizations up in Saratoga a couple of weeks ago, and it's just something you know when you see it. You talk to people who are there supporting a loved one, in support of a loved one who committed suicide, and you just know. I mean, there are a couple of thousand people there, and even if 10, I personally know the 10% of the people I talk to, they're talking about a gay youth, some openly, some not. And but this, we at 1,000 Moms, our statistics show that whatever the suicide rate is for the straight population at large, multiply it by 3 for the LGBT community.
Wow.
For LGBT youth. Yeah.
So if somebody wants to find out more about your organization, how could they do so?
Well, yes, I'd like to point people directly to our new website for the book, because that is our primary focus now. We've spent a lot of time. We are beginning a 6-part series. We just filmed a video, a 1-hour program based on the book, but it sort of encompasses everything we've talked here about, the stress response, the stress issues for gay youth. And we are just signed an arrangement with Schenectady Cable TV to do a 6-part series on the brain, and it will be wide-ranging on all topics. But the best way to get a hold of us to get this information is to go to this new website, which is called healingthebrainbook.com. And once again, it's healingthebrainbook.com. And there will be information about the book, video, sample clips, And our mission linked to our to the Thousand Moms website, where we have all sorts of information about our mission and how we came about and what is the what are we trying to do. And it's I think it's very clear, and we would appreciate folks going to the site with us, healingthebrainbook.com. And we hope people buy the book, but all, not as giving away money. We think we have incredibly valuable information that needs to get out there. That's our friend Cece Katchik, who helped connect us, Cynthia. She said, "No, it's not a book. It's not. It's incredibly valuable information that people need to have in their hands." So thank you for asking.
Thank you so much for being on Focus on Albany. So if they want to learn more about you, they should go to your website.
Healingthebrainbook.com.
Yes. So, David, good luck to you. Thank you for taking the time to be on Focus on Albany. You've been listening to David Bullock, who has written a book called Healing the Brain, Stress, Trauma, and LGBTQ Youth. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. And if you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany on Twitter and share your thoughts. David, thank you so much, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great holiday weekend.
Great. Thank you.